Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
46% of Americans expect to leave behind financial obligations when they pass away. So it's crucial to make sure your family is financially protected. Policy Genius helps you find the right life insurance coverage by comparing options from America's top insurers with help from licensed, award-winning agents. Secure your financial future with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get free life insurance quotes in just a few clicks. That's policygenius.com.
I'm Tyler.
And I'm Michael.
And you're listening to
The Elephant Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Elephant Podcast. Wow, what's up with that beak? Goodness. No,
that's all right. We're good.
No,
we're
good.
I got you.
Okay, thanks. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Element Podcast, where we just laugh for a living. I'm your host, Casey Smith. Mm. This is brought to you by First Light Gear. Mm. And Tyler Jones is here.
Mm. Hey.
As well as Michael Stogall.
That's me.
And Gregnet.
I'm here.
Greg Latham. A bunch of killers in the room right now.
You're in the wrong input. That's why.
What?
I got you. Don't worry. You good.
We
had to figure
that
out.
Oh,
that's going to be me.
Greg took the number three.
Dang,
no,
it's,
I put you in
Greg.
The four.
Moving on up.
Mm.
Let's go, Greg.
Yeah, we'll see.
Greg of the Creek. Greg of the Creek.
Oh, boy. Well, we thought about just doing a college football discussion.
Yeah, we should do that
a little bit.
We just might. But
who's going to be number one preseason?
Casey Smith. So we're.
They ain't gonna be Ohio
but
State.
It's gonna be Georgia.
I'm low. Obviously.
Georgia.
Obviously.
You don't think Alabama?
No.
Same as
done.
I just saw when this thing's called stupid early projection, where Alabama was.
Was that pre or post Saban leaving?
That's like today. Mm. That's I thought weird too, for sure. But you know, it's Alabama.
Georgia.
Yeah, Georgia.
Yeah,
for sure.
Preseason
number
one. Harbaugh's not going to be in Michigan.
Let's go.
Oh, dang. Yeah, that would be something, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
For
that
sure.
Be
then.
The best.
Yes.
He's going to go be a Seahawks coach.
No, he's not. He's going to go to the Chargers.
Oh, he is.
Maybe.
Georgia.
He's somewhere West Coast. He's a West Coast guy.
Yeah, he definitely is a West Coast guy.
Yeah.
Not the good way.
Georgia probably, yeah. What about you, Greg?
I have nothing to say. College football.
Hey, dude. Thought you were a college golfer. Yeah, now we got to turn you back up.
Yeah, turn me back up.
There we go.
Yeah. So
the way too early poll.
SMU is number 25 in that.
Golly,
that poll.
Golly, man.
Yeah, I know.
Pony up.
That's
speaking
what they
of
do,
moving
right?
on up.
Speaking of,
yeah. What is it? What's your?
It's a thumb, isn't it?
No, that's the A&M one.
Oh.
This horse ears.
What's that?
That's a frog.
That's a.
It's
don't
this?
Ever do that again.
Pony up, y'all.
That's what you guys
it's not
say, right?
Straight up.
What's straight
we're
up?
We're not like, oh,
peace
alert,
out.
Alert. There's something over there.
I feel like when a horse is like its maddest, its ears are back. So it should be like this or something.
I can't get them back.
Looking at you.
Yeah, lots of big shakeups in the coaching.
What's Ohio's?
In the football world.
Who's Ohio?
Y'all have a thumb?
No, they just have a nut. Everybody just you could say whips that. The Whipster Buckeye out of their pocket and holds it up.
Yeah, that's what it is. You just got to do a O, an H, an I, or an O.
This is an A. Okay.
Y'all have a sign.
What's your I? Do that again.
He just stands there.
That's not an I. That's a triangle.
No.
Because he
would be like this.
Well, he was a fan of the purple Teletubbies.
Looks crazy.
Right?
This doesn't?
Weren't you?
Purple Teletubbies?
Yeah,
no, I'm a
that's
green.
The one that had the triangle on his
I'm
head,
a green
right?
guy.
I don't know. Did you know that that film set where the Teletubbies filmed got to getting like too much publicity? So they built the berm all the way around the thing. They're down inside of it. And then now, like, it has, like, gone back to nature. You can't even tell it's
really?
The film set anymore.
I'll admit something. I never watched a single episode of Teletubbies.
Me neither. Me neither.
I just know who they are.
I wish I could say the same.
Yeah.
I feel like we're just a little too old for Teletubbies.
No, mm-hmm. I think it's where we grew up.
No. Oh, is it?
Ohio. Ohio.
Teletubbies.
Was more into that kind of thing.
Then tubs up there for sure.
No. You guys are just old. That's all it is.
No, dude. That was during my generation.
No.
Let me look. I'm fact checking this right now.
I like the college football talk better.
Yeah, me too.
Definitely.
So you fact check that. So Saban left.
Man,
Michael,
sad.
What's the state of Ohio State's?
Oh, we're all the way back.
Are
all
you?
The way.
Marvin
National
Harris,
championship
where's
next
Marvin year. Marvin Harrison
Jr.? Well, he'll be in Chicago next year, well, but
that'll be good for him.
Ohio State's winning it all, so that's all there is to
man,
it.
Man, I don't know about that. I saw Michael Penix, like, as the third quarterback pick in the draft. I was surprised
I mean,
that.
That's what happens when you play 15 years in college.
I feel as if, for one, that's not true, and for two, that he's pretty good.
Yeah, he's okay. Michigan kind of had him. Or, no.
Yeah, wait, are you fixing to give Michigan some credit?
It was Michigan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am. But Michael Penix was just kind of looking a little afraid the entire game, which I would be too, guarantee it. So.
Yeah.
He still pulled off some good throws.
Oh, for sure. Some of them he's like running, throwing across the body, and it's still there. It's like, that's pretty impressive.
He's pretty good.
Pretty impressive
guy. I think he's probably one of the best pro
you know why?
Prospects I've seen. This year.
Came from a Big Ten program. That's why.
Where's that? What,
Purdue or something?
Indiana.
I didn't even know it was a school anymore. Eric.
Yeah, Eric.
It's just a basketball school. That's all it is.
He's listening to rap over there.
Eric's making a thumbnail for us for our next Meteor video that comes out. It's a hog hunting video, and it's one of the best ones we've ever made. So I might be a little partial to it, of course. My dad's in it. It's pretty cool.
This is like the way you grew up hunting hogs, isn't it?
It
like
is.
Running them down with shotguns.
It is. It's exactly that. Doing that thing was the thing we used to do all the time.
It's cool
Didn't
stuff.
Didn't do the boat all the time, but the boat is in this one. We did the boat often. So it was a good time. And that'll be out next week. So look forward to that. But if you didn't know, right now there is a new Meteor video out where Tyler shoots a big giant Neil guy. That was cool.
How much did the thing weigh?
487 pounds.
Dude, I'd call it 500 all day for sure.
Yeah,
that thing
well,
was huge.
It's like how many 10-pound bass are there really?
Yeah,
right?
Well, true. But I think this thing, I could if it weighed 500 pounds, it would not shock me at all.
Yeah, but you got to say a real number.
Oh, yeah, 501
all for right. sure. those are jeans, aren't they?
Nah,
Levi
yeah,
501s?
That's right,
yeah.
I like them 541s when I was in college because they're athletic fit, so they got the extra room in the thighs, you know.
Never
nowadays,
needed that.
Nowadays, I need bell bottoms. You know,
I wore the bell bottoms. What was it, the 513s or something? It was like the cowboy cut, boot cut ones.
Yeah,
or I can't remember what they were.
I like boot cut, but I got a problem. So I got these old boots that I like a lot. I like the shape of them, I like the color. They're ostrich skin, kind of rounded, but they're kind of short.
That's right.
They're kind of short. And if you get boots that are too tall, they make your pants look kind of weird because they get up past that boot cut.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got these really nice kind of pointy toe, roach killing looking boots that are deer skin.
That's what I like.
That my dad bought me.
Mm-hmm.
But they're tall. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking about there's a place in Fort Worth that does like that works on boots. I don't know. They'd probably do it at like – what's the place in Sulphur Springs?
That place might do it, but – you know, where I got my boots resold and stuff oftentimes is the laundromat. Yeah. There's like a connection there. The laundromat in Silver Springs had a
what do they call them? Not a booter, but
a booty.
There's a name for a cobbler. Cobbler.
Oh, yeah.
They had a cobbler. That
I just need them. I need them shorter on the tops, you know.
I think you should just wear them on the outside of your britches.
Well,
that's what I used to always do.
Yeah.
But as a married man, that's not a thing you do. But as a single man,
I feel like that's a little aggressive.
No,
going outside the thing.
It's aggressive if you live in Ohio. But
that's
in
right.
Texas, it's just like what dudes do that have testosterone and get
don't
sunlight.
Have we don't have that.
No. I know.
Neither
of
those
things. None of it.
I think there's a correlation there.
Yeah, it's vitamin D is what it is. That's the correlator. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Have you listened to the Huberman podcast?
I've listened to a couple.
Have you really?
Sure.
I did. That's surprising for a guy that watched Teletubbies.
I'm trying to compensate.
This is getting ridiculous.
Hey, it came out in 1997.
Okay.
So we were...
That is about your guys' time, huh?
I mean, we should have probably been watching it, but we weren't.
Mm.
I'm kind of thankful. Parents wouldn't let me.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What were you guys
watching?
I
don't even know if that was really the truth or not.
I watched Barney, and then I watched...
Barney's worse than the Teletubbies.
Yeah.
You kidding me?
No, man. Barney's wholesome, dude.
Barney did some crazy stuff.
No.
What?
I can't say it on this podcast.
No. This
I can't
isn't,
say it
no,
on this podcast.
It ain't like Barney is Disney or anything.
You're thinking about late stage Barney.
Yeah, this is like your generation Barney.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
your
the difference.
AKA we got, messes up everything.
We got a crazy Barney. You guys had a normal Barney.
We had a normal Barney. He was just a nice guy like Mr. Rogers that sang songs and... Took care of kids.
And then watched like whatever was on PBS. I probably went from Barney straight to Kratz Creatures and
never even
Power Rangers. Wild Kratz? You know what Wild Kratz is?
Yeah.
So their first show was Kratz Creatures.
Oh. Yeah.
Kratz Brothers. Chris Martin.
I was a big Power Rangers kid.
Yeah. Well, you're not real Power Rangers, but whatever.
I don't even know what that means.
Which one did you want to be besides the pink one?
The red one. Not a
you
pink
like
Power Ranger kind of guy.
You want to be Jason?
Sure. I don't even remember watching
Power
Rangers, but I like the red one.
I like the red one too, but I think I like the green one or the black one best.
Interesting.
I think. Wasn't the green one like, he wasn't there all the time or something?
That's right. He turned to white sometimes too. Tommy,
Maze.
Right?
Tommy.
Yeah.
I remember a Tommy.
Tommy was green, then he was white later. And then the black one was the black guy. What was his name? I can't remember his name. Yeah, and all I remember is... No, for real. It's kind of weird, right? It was weird that they did it that way. But then Billy. I remember Billy. He was the nerd one. The
Billy
blue.
Moles?
Billy Moles, yeah.
Is that the guy that sells it?
Zach was the black one. Yeah.
So, dude, look at that. There's a Kestrel that just landed out in my past Brian. You can't see him now. He landed in the grass right there and then came back down.
Trinity. Or Trini. Yeah.
In
the 90s, nobody was sensitive. You know? Everybody's fine with who they are.
I think I watched, I'm trying to think of the, I watched some like Rugrats, Recess. What else did I watch? TGIF. You remember TGIF?
Oh, yeah. That just meant that Friday nights were good times to watch TV.
Yeah, you that's when you build your palate, eat a dinner, and you just lay there and watch hours of good stuff.
For TGIF, I can't say G.
TJ.
Because it's stuff too country. I can't say G. J. We used to eat Viennese and Cheetos.
Mm.
That was like my go-to.
And you know
you
what?
You talk about nasty.
Dude, you talk about a 180.
And like what we think we should consume? Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. I mean, it's a wonder about testosterone ain't a negative number. You know what I mean? Like eating stuff like that.
Yeah. That's like, I don't know. It's wild. That's, I think like we're constantly working against what probably the 70s through the 90s of food.
Mm-hmm.
Massive food product, mass.
I bet you the 2000s are still like that too. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, there's like a, it's probably still just going down that path, and there's just like these deviations of people trying to do different. Because, I mean, you walk down the aisles at Brookshire's, and it's still.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's all it is somebody will try to deviate towards health, and then corporate food industry will like bring them back in,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So it's like we're going to try to go healthy, and be vegan or whatever, yeah. Which is a bad choice, by the way. But
speaking of that,
they'll like, Kraft will be like, you know what? We've got some vegan cheese over here. Come yeah. to this aisle, yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah. And it's like,
oh, they got the money. They know what to do mm-hmm. with it.
Speaking of vegans.
The Huberman podcast we're talking about, I was listening to that this morning with Rick Rubin. Greg, you know who yeah. Rubin is? You know who he is? Mm-hmm. You know who he is? Produced Jay-Z and a bunch of other people. Anyway, he's kind of like a health nut kind of guy, mentality and all that. He's kind of little woo-woo or whatever. But he like said he was a vegan at one point, and then he's like now a big proponent of red meat. I forget what they called it, but like red meat that is sourced in a certain way, right? So essentially wild or
like grass-fed type stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, just kind of a little bit of I like when somebody who's popular has that sentiment because mm-hmm. it helps the hunting world's case a little bit. You
yeah,
know what I
yeah.
mean?
You know, to kind of bring that to what we do, people like grain-fed meats because they're so fatty. Mm. Well, it's because people are cooking their steaks in the wrong stuff. You can take a deer steak, an elk steak, a Nilgai steak, that so all this.
I thought we left all that meat back there.
We did. Oh, so sad.
By the way, it is awesome meat. That ain't just a thing people say.
The thing is that people don't understand that you should take red meat, put it in a skillet with like a lot of butter, and that's where you get your fat from. You don't have to source it from within the meat from grains, right? Mm. Like that's the pairing of red meat and butter is just like the way it's supposed to go.
Yeah, or you could go out and harvest a big old pig right now.
Oh, there's a lot of fat on it. Acorn fat.
Yeah.
Mm. Good stuff.
We did that recently.
Yeah. If you haven't watched that video, I don't know if we've talked about that on here.
I think we did. We promoted it last. But yeah, it's definitely something. It's cool because you get to see that pig. Also, there's a picture of us on the Instagram feed that you can check out of the fat layer on that pig. It was ridiculous. But Casey and I are going to do some cool stuff with that. So, you know, video-wise, you'll be looking forward to that kind of stuff this spring. We should probably, after we have the podcast, talk about what we're going to do with that fat, man.
I'd like to.
I'm excited.
I got a couple things we can do with it.
Mess with it.
We can make our own sausage, which I'm okay with. I've done it before. Breakfast sausage is good. It's easy to make because you're not preserving it. It's essentially just seasoned ground meat, you know. But I think one of the things that we're going to do with it, like the priority would be, render it out and turn it into straight lard so we can cook with it. I mean, well, you just got a new cast iron skillet, and
I'm struggling with it, dude.
That's the way to season it, is that lard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm struggling with the season. I tried it once, mm-hmm. and in that video, we found out that the seasoning wasn't done or wasn't right, and so I went and seasoned it again, and I scrubbed it down and everything, and then I seasoned it up and put it and had two rounds in the oven at about an hour each, mm-hmm. and went to try to cook on it the other day, and it did not do very well. It stuck on it again.
Yeah.
So I just don't know what to do.
Sometimes there's just a breaking period, and there's a lot of different things going on with them, but like, I don't know.
I'm just essentially, not, I know it's the way that it, I know there's a way to do it, and I know. I'm just not on board with it, man. I'm struggling. I want to be a cast iron skillet guy, but I cannot figure out how to get it done.
You
don't know
what's
the weirdest
when
thing.
When mine started cooking good is when I got after them with sandpaper and just sanded it all down and started over from the very base metal.
Just take it to like a straight up silver metal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. then season that, and then it's way better. So might be something to do.
I got a Blackstone for my birthday mm-hmm. last year or something, and I seasoned that. But I did it when I seasoned it. I did it five times because this guy on YouTube said to do it, you know, three to seven times, something like that. I did five seasoning sessions, but all within like the course of an hour, hour and a half, whatever. And that sucker is seasoned.
Really?
Yeah,
works good.
Well, I can cook anything on it. I mean, mm-hmm. I cooked fish on it the other day.
Mm.
So
that's cool.
Yeah, I cooked bacon on it in the morning and cooked fish for lunch. It was primo.
I do that a lot. Yep. Cook bacon in the morning, just leave the grease in the pan and mm-hmm. cook some in there later.
Yep.
It's a
way to go,
that's
man.
A good move.
For sure. Yep.
Yeah. Michael, how do you cook?
Cook.
Drive to Gorditas? Come on now.
Drive to Taco Bell.
Greg, how do you cook?
I've been cooking.
Have you?
I've been cooking a little bit on, I do mostly grill stuff, like backstrap.
What kind of grill? Do you have like a?
Just a propane grill.
Propane grill. Man, I want a pellet grill bad.
Me too, man.
But it's so, they're expensive.
Dude. I know, and I got a decent propane grill, you know, like a Charbroil 4-burner or whatever, and it's got like the shields on it or whatever, but it's still, you know what I dislike about propane grills is the flame up thing.
Mm-hmm.
It just always happens, man. Because I ain't never cooking no lean piece of meat.
Yeah.
Cooking something with some fat on it.
Yeah.
And it's going to just.
That and the flavor, man. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's just, when you get. What it's a little bit of smoke added to it. It's just a different deal.
You've been
man.
Doing some of the pellet grill stuff. How many people, first of all, are yelling at us about pellet grills right now? Did you know that there's like this anti-pellet grill movement thing that happens within
men? Is it good or bad?
It's bad.
So it's because you should be able to cook on with logs that are axed by your hand.
Yeah, some people have 8 hours to sit around and not do anything while a piece of meat smokes. and other people have a life and like to hunt and do other things, so they use pellet grills. Me personally, I'm going to be a pellet grill guy sometime.
I would love to be like up at the school getting my, like say picking my kids up from practice and just like straight up Wi-Fi turn my grill on so that it is hot when I get there and I can just throw stuff on it.
It's a thing.
That'd be cool.
That's a thing that is offered.
Yeah.
And I would like to know what the move should be.
Yeah,
if you're listening and you know and you're a pellet grill guy, I don't want anybody to be like, well, what you need is a 300-gallon propane tank and cut it in half and
I'm interested, but it's expensive. I've been looking on Facebook Marketplace a little bit, but it stinks because like there ain't a whole lot of pellet grills for sale out here where we live. You got to go to the Metroplex, and it's just a whole day, half day thing. You know,
I'm about to do that tomorrow.
Go do that. Might be worth.
Yeah, if you see me at Dallas Safari Club, say hi. I'm gonna be there, and then we're gonna go. Do some other things while we're there. Here's what happens when you live where we live. Like, when you go to the city.
It's a big deal.
You multitask.
Yeah.
You do a bunch of different things while you're there because, I mean, dude, literally, if you need anything outside of 22 shells or 20 gauge here or whatever it may be, you got to go to the Metroplex about near. We can go halfway there for some stuff. But, like, you need anything specialty at all.
Sports stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Sports equipment stuff, man. Got to go to at least a Greenville, but yeah, I don't know. That's the pellet grill thing is intriguing. It's just expensive. And I mean, it's one of those things like I could probably pull it off like a pretty decent one, but it just hurts to go drain your bank account at the end of the month. I don't like being at the end of my rope at the end of the month. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's not fun, but yeah, if you got thoughts about that, I would love to know. Also, like, what kind of pellets? I think there's different flavors and stuff of pellets, right?
My dad's been messing around with that stuff a little bit. He's got one of those stand smokers. Like, I think you and I both have one of those things, right? Just a little electric deal.
Yeah.
But he's been like, I don't know. I don't know if it makes any difference. He's like, I started on apple, and then I finished it on cherry. I'm like, come on. I don't know, man. I don't know.
Yeah. I hear you on that. I have a stand smoker, and that thing will... And I do it. It's chips, which they don't do a whole lot of chip stuff anymore, and it'll burn through them quick.
It will.
But like, also at the same time, it's a lot of smoke out. So in 15 minutes, you can have as much smoke as you want on that piece of meat, pretty much. Yeah.
Man, I don't know if it's just the Texan in me or what, but just good old oak wood smoke is probably some
like
of my favorite.
Like oak and hickory for sure. Mesquite's good too, man. I like mesquite a lot. My dad used to cook on mesquite all the time back when we had deer leases out in West
Texas.
We've
always said whenever we go somewhere where there are mesquites, we're going to get some mesquite wood.
Yeah, and we have a circus of different logistics to
figure out. How much extracurriculars do we get to involve ourselves in on trips?
About zero, dude.
About 0.0.
Terrible.
Yeah.
I remember
this year.
The last trip to West Texas.
None. You got to hunt quail like for half a day.
Yeah. Well, I hunted quail walking in to help Michael get his deer.
Yeah, Michael?
That's about it.
Tell us about your deer.
You smoked one.
But I did. I smoked one.
You just saw the wings right over there.
Like, sure Greg, enough. I remember Greg the last night, like, hanging out with, like, an Astros pitcher and, you know, not nearly as cool, but a comedian. I hope he's listening. But, no, we're hanging out with, you know, a pretty Insta-famous kind of guy or whatever. It's fun to hang out with, but, like, you know, Greg is a Astros, like, fan, you know. And this, there's a pitcher in camp with us, and he's over there, like, working his tail off at, like, 8 at night or whatever. I'm like, hey, you don't have to. If you can't finish that thing tonight, just you can hang out or whatever. We just don't get a whole lot of time to do stuff, man. We just don't have a whole lot of time to do the extra just kind of hanging around stuff.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today. Because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
Yeah, that's Michael? Why I bring Brian around sometimes.
I don't know how much we've talked about anything and everything, but just the short of it, you have experienced some times where you have been unable to put the arrow where you needed to.
Yep, sure enough.
And you're getting better.
Something like that.
You smoked an antlerless deer.
I don't know really what the problem has been.
Yeah.
But seemed to get over the hump.
That's good. You smoked it, right?
Humpty Dumpty.
Smoked it.
Smoked it down. So, can you tell us what you have done with all that deer meat?
I ate it all while I was back in Ohio.
Did you eat a bunch of it?
I ate pretty much all of it. Good. I left a ham and a shoulder for
you
my
said
dad.
You left
and that's
some.
It.
How'd you eat that stuff?
I mean, we just cooked steaks with the tenderloins and backstraps and everything, mm-hmm. and then just did some roasts, New Year's Day roasts with the hams.
So what did you do with that deer? Did you just freeze it when you got home? Or?
Mm-hmm. And they just took it back on
just
ice.
Just put it in baggies?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Gotcha. Greg?
Yeah?
You got a couple deer from this year.
Yeah.
You've been grilling meat. Yeah.
Been grilling.
That's good. That's it. That's what you're going to do. You're just going to grill it all.
Anything's a steak, dude.
I'm trying to get through, like, 2021, 2022 backstrap.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to cook all that up right now.
You got the Ted Nugent thing going on.
Yeah.
here's how I do. I eat backstraps quick, and then I also save. So, like, I'll a lot of times, like, in the past, I didn't have, like, freeze, vacuum seal or whatever. So I'd like get freezer burn on back straps because I'd be like, oh, I gotta save that. It's like the best part.
I know exactly what you mean, man. Like, there's been many times where I'll be digging around my freezer and find elk backstrap. And it's like, why is this still in here? Of all the things. And it's because you like cherish it. So you don't want to use it all up at once, right?
Yeah. It's a weird deal. Like, I'll usually have a backstrap, but a lot of times I'll eat like, if I say I got like two deer, I go and get in 2 weeks or something. And then I'll have four backstraps and I'll have them, you know, probably halved. And then I'll just hammer through most of them. I have like one or two left. One of them will be hidden somewhere, and the other one will be in the door, and it'll just sit there for forever, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's something I've been dealing with some this year is I got every deer I killed this year processed, which is weird for me. You know, I usually get like one a year processed by processor and do the rest myself, but we've just been so busy. And my vacuum sealer broke, so just, you know, it's just easier to do that, especially with two little kids. Don't have the space, yada, yada, you know, all the things. And so, like, but I don't think that's very uncommon. I think that a lot of people get deer processed. I mean, there's, where we live, there's lots of places that only process wild game. And we don't even live in, like, a, what you'd call a deer hunting area of the state, right? But, like, these places don't process beef or pork or anything. I mean, they will process wild pork, but they don't do anything but wild game, right? So I think you turned me on to this because it's a problem I've had is there's like a certain way to get a deer processed, and there's like an economical way, and there's ways that like you may or may not use this stuff as well. So what brought this up is you said you had your back straps halved, and I started doing that. Because I used to get them butterflied. Well, then you just end up with a ton of packages, and you have to thaw out like three or four packages. And the sizes of the steaks are never what you want them to be, right? So it's just difficult. Mm-hmm. What are some other things that you do when you go get a deer processed?
Well, I used to do back straps in thirds. And then just like a third wouldn't feed my whole family. So
family get bigger.
Yeah. So, I mean, if it's you and your you know, roommate or whatever you want to call it, and that's it, then you might go thirds. But halves is what works for me with a family of four. And I'll usually do tenderloins whole. You kind of turned me on to doing these, like, football roast and maybe did you do another roast and then the rest into ground out of the ham or something? Neck roast. Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, like, quarter in the neck roast pretty much. And those work. I like that a lot, actually, because the neck roast is really good. And you can turn it into barbacoa real easy, too, if you want to do it that way. But it's already there, packaged, ready to go. And the rest of it in the ground, which, to me, I've done a lot of roasts. I like doing deer roasts. But there are some big muscle groups within the shoulder or back ham that have a lot of like tendons in them and stuff and just don't break down very well in a roast. They'll break down a little better in a barbacoa application, but I don't really like when I do my own, if I try to cut roasts out, then it's not great most of the time. You know what I mean? And it has a lot of those tendons in it. Whereas like if I was just to take and say, okay, football roast, I want to quarter up this neck, everything else, let's just throw it and grind. And, you know, I mean, dude, I did two packages of the McCormick's taco seasoning, which has no MSG or anything funky in it. easy, man. Like, I did 2 pounds of ground deer meat with that, two packages of that on it. And then there's this Mexican street corn package that I found at Brookshire's that is bomb. And you put, like, mayonnaise, sour cream, and the corn. You know, I just took 2 cans of corn, put some of that seasoning on there. Golly, dude, you put the Mexican corn on the taco with a little lime juice, and you don't need anything else. It had some cilantro in it. Dude, oh, so good.
You know,
so.
I like to season my own meat and not use the packages, but it's handy having a couple of those laying around in case you got to do something fast, you know, and well,
I like seasoning my own, too. And I do it all the time, but when I don't have them, but, like, I can't do it better than the way they do it, really. It is so good.
It's also nice because, and this is why I started getting so much ground done, because my wife is not a cook, but she really ain't a cook when there's a hunk of meat laying there. Mm-hmm. But when there's ground meat, at least it's kind of approachable.
Yeah.
She might make it in, you know, she can make spaghetti now mm-hmm. because she understands what to do with some ground meat, you know. Same thing goes for those, like, seasoning packets and stuff. She ain't, love her to death, but she ain't going to be able to season any taco meat, you know. She's going to go buy a recipe, and then she's going to confuse a teaspoon for a cup. She did that the other day on, what was it? It was olive oil for some reason.
Oh, no.
Something she was doing. Yeah. She used a cup of olive oil instead of a tablespoon.
It's like 1476 in which, olive oil.
You can't ever have too much olive oil, right? But yeah. It was just funny.
Expensive.
Yeah. Yeah, I buy that good olive oil, too.
Yeah.
So, it is expensive.
I like good olive oil.
But yeah, that's a recently, daily cooking segment for
you guys. You guys recently went lost. And shot at and shot some deer or whatever, mm-hmm. right?
Did a lot of deer hunting.
Like right around the Christmas time, I guess. Y'all went and...
Yeah, so Texas has a late rut in a lot of the state. It's just different. If you've listened to the Element Podcast for long, you've heard us talk about the rut here and how it's just... It is not the same as the Midwest. The Midwest rut is very defined and it's very cool. And then even still there, you can see rut action outside of the rut dates. But in Texas, it's just amplified greatly, right? You can see rut action from, across the state if you wanted to do it. You could have does being bred in September in some places, and then there are does being bred in January in other places. And that stuff bleeds over into other areas and zones. And there's even these little micro things, right, where kind of where Greg's from down there, it's a early November, like Halloween type.
It's a very, like, classic rut.
Yeah, yeah, which that's kind of like a weird spot for that to be going on compared to everything else around
it. But you go, like, 20 miles, and it's, like, December.
Yeah, strange, right?
Crazy. So weird.
So we, like, kind of drive around the state and try to find some of that stuff to hunt. And so we did that recently, it was fun. We saw deer constantly. I did not shoot one.
Y'all came close, though,
right? We came close, man. I don't know. Something about the December rut stuff, I just feel like potentially the deer in Texas are just, they just kind of get dumber, you know? And we say, and that's kind of why everybody likes to hunt the rut, right? But, like, especially deer in Texas, if they are feeling ruddy, it's like you can get away with some stuff. They're still going to be jumpy when you go to shoot at them. They're still going to be jackrabbits whenever you go to moving around. But, like, I don't know. It's just like they do kind of some weird stuff. And that's why we love the rut, right? I mean, deer are just visible. And right now, it's right now even. Like, it's mid-January or early January, I guess. And I got corn at my house just pretty much as a wildlife observer more than anything. And, there's hardly any bucks in daytime, but
conservationist.
But yeah, that's right. That's right. Preservationist at my place.
you'll fit right in.
That's
man.
Right. You know, maybe that's how the messaging is. People, conservation isn't catching on. Maybe we should just try preservation. Just see if that
I
works.
I guarantee you, it'd work, dude.
I mean, it's working in most of the government land in Texas, right?
For sure,
it's all preservationist
land. A lot of it is,
yeah.
Man.
Anyways. hey, before we get in trouble again, tell me on that note.
Before we go past this, you need to give some credit where credit's due.
Good call, man. I have a friend now, acquaintance, who is a game warden in a certain portion of Texas, not to oust anyone, but he gave me a call back very promptly, mm-hmm. like within a couple hours, and I appreciate that.
And was apologetic that he didn't get to you sooner.
That's right. Nice guy. And was one of the more helpful people I've talked to lately.
Yeah.
So, yeah, pretty cool.
There's some good people that work in places.
Yeah. the three of us went out, three little bears, to try to find us some good eating and maybe do a little hunting. Probably not going to tell this
time?
Day by day. Yeah. Well,
yeah, Greg, hit the highlights, bro.
Greg did some self-filming and hunting. Michael filmed me because he's a selfless, kind individual. And
a hard worker.
He is.
Wow.
And he likes boat rides, so it works.
I do.
After
I think,
all that stuff we
Greg
said.
I think Greg doesn't like being in the boat.
You don't like boats?
It's ever since he went flying to the front of it.
I like being early.
He likes being early, but it took him like 14 days of hunting to kill a deer down there. Whatever. The boat makes you early. You've done it, Michael.
I mean, it definitely makes it so there's less walking.
That helps for sure. But people crack on me about that, but whatever. We killed more bucks this year, so. Michael and I sat in the truck till 8:30 in Kansas, and then went and killed the buck of a lifetime. So
it's true.
Y'all guys are just overvaluing things, I think. No, Greg,
I didn't kill any bucks early in the morning.
Greg's for sure scared of the boat after after some of our experiences
after we hit the e-brake in Arkansas.
We gave it the old Fred Flintstone and just put our feet down. Oh, yeah, that was rough. We didn't have any of that on this trip. Michael and I had a nice couple cruises in the boat, man. You know, mid to late December, you get some really, like, consistent weather days, which can be nice. Because you know what you're going to get, but at the same time, it gets difficult because you get the same wind every day.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have a wind change the whole time we were there. I can remember one day being like, oh, the wind is 15 degrees different today. This is great. It opens up so much stuff, you know. So you end up blowing out stuff. It's almost like you can only hunt for, you know, 3, 4, 5 days or something before you kind of feel like you've made an intrusion.
Mm-hmm. And it was pretty hot too. Like it was cold when we got there, but it like warmed up quite a bit.
Yeah, which deer in Texas are kind of used to that, but still,
as a
hunter, yeah, you want those cold days. You know, Greg, did you do any rattling?
I think I did.
Yeah, wasn't very memorable, was it?
No,
I did quite a bit of rattling too, and we did rattle in one buck, but he didn't come all the way in,
and a guy.
He did. Oh my goodness!
Did. He did come all the way.
Let me tell you about the buck first, and then Michael can tell you about the guy. So we were in this place that was pretty open, and we saw a couple deer at distance. And I glassed, and one of them was like a potential shooter. So I was like, I'm gonna rattle and see, because it looked like they might have been doing like a lockdown type thing. Well, I rattle, and then a bigger buck pops up. And he's the one that decides to come to us, and we're freaking out, right? So we watch this, like, really solid wide 8-point, probably cover 200 yards coming to us. He gets to about 130 yards, and he's got to go down in this ditch and come back up. And I'm, like, getting my bow ready to shoot because it's those deer down there, you just got to be ready.
Yeah, it's like
we've learned that.
Once he disappeared, it's like next time we're going to see him, he's going to be at 70 yards.
It's going to be almost in range, right? Well, then he just never shows up.
Mm-hmm.
So that was... That was not cool. He did a thing. And here's what ends up hurting in that situation. A, it was the biggest buck we saw all week.
Mm-hmm.
And B, we don't know exactly what he did. So you want to learn from the situation, and you can't learn everything you wish you could because you don't know what the final outcome was. So we drew some inferences on it. But I think I've seen this before, but if deer are – not super fired up. Like, if you're rattling that deer at distance and they're not running to you, they're essentially coming to that sound until they find something better.
Mm.
And I think that's what he did. I think he smelled something and was like, ah. They kind of, like, did the whole, like, out of sight, out of mind thing. Like, I hadn't heard that rattling in a while. Oh, there's a good smell. I'm going to go to that. So we were encouraged by rattling after that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we decided then to lose our minds one night and try like 4 different places and have a terrible time
just
finding a spot to hunt.
It's a sweat fest.
But finally ended up like, well, we're here at the evening time. It's time to hunt. And then what happened, Michael?
So we're just kind of sitting in our final destination because if you remember, we moved around like 4 or 5 different times.
Yeah, micro-adjustments.
Yeah, micro-adjustments. And then you like, we're just sitting there and you're like, all right, I see a buck. He's like across a big draw, so it's like, well, we might as well rattle.
Mm-hmm.
So you start rattling, and he actually does start coming in, but a guy, or we didn't know it was a guy. We just hear bat, bat, bat. Like
two
just
really
grunts.
Good sounding grunts.
Yeah, like sounds really good.
Yeah.
And then, like, probably 30 seconds later, just hear like, rah, rah, like it blows the reed out. And it's like, well. I think that's a dude is what you said.
He for sure blew his reed
and
out.
I was sitting there like, oh, I hope that's a deer, but it probably is a guy. And so you rattled again or something, and I'm sitting there videoing you, and you just like stop rattling and put your hand up, and I look down, I look down into the camera, and I just see Mr. Navy SEAL coming up the hill, full ghillie suit, just like look up and just like okay. And walk back down.
stalking and fighting bucks up there on the hill.
Okay, brother.
He thought he was about to walk up there and just shoot a big buck. And instead, it's just KC sitting there staring right back at him.
Yeah.
Do you know me?
That's exactly what he said.
Yeah, he did know me for sure. That was kind of sad. After that, we got up and went back to the boat and kind of got back early.
Yeah, except you saw the buck we went in there originally trying to hunt. 50 yards away from you on the bank.
That's right. I literally reached down to pick up the anchor and look up, and the buck we were after that we'd seen in there the day before
was in there like 50
yards just looking at us.
KC was so ticked.
I talked about it already in the podcast, but I got caught in Kansas bad at about 50 yards by a buck that was probably not going to shoot. I was not going to shoot probably, but he was big. Mm-hmm. The big white eight.
Yeah. Mm, yeah.
Looking right at me when I turned around. It felt so dumb, dude.
We did that to him, too.
I forgot about that.
me and you.
Yeah, we did it a couple times.
Yeah. Other highlights for me. I finally found a spot I liked, and it was on this like thicket, and on the edge of it, up against the water, and you can kind of predict deer that live around water. You know, here in East Texas, we got a lot of these lakes that have public ground around them. It's like core engineers or whatever, and deer will move along those water boundaries with the wind blowing off the thicket into them. Right, so it's a thing that we were trying to capitalize on, and sure enough, we found a spot where it just worked. And Michael and I went in there one morning, kind of even built a little bit of a, I wouldn't even call it a ground blind, but just kind of leaned a stick or two up to get a little bit extra cover. And it was a little bit windy, I think, that morning, right?
It was a little bit of a breeze compared to the other mornings. I mean, yeah. Every other morning was just like 2 mile an hour winds, mm-hmm. and just barely feel anything.
And so there was a little bit of sound cover, which is good for getting in somewhere. But when you have tiny Texas deer that don't make a lot of noise, they can sneak up on you. Well, that's what happened. You can tell where we're going with this. A really nice buck. I don't remember what he was right now, but he sneaks up on us. I'm looking at the wrong hole because it's the first time we sit here, and I'm thinking one's going to pop up over there. Well, he ends up 90 degrees from us on our right, and Michael sees him. We'd heard him, mm-hmm. but couldn't find him, and I was looking around. Michael sees him, and how far is he?
15. I just see top of tines coming through the brush, and it's just, like, at that point, it's like, okay, we cannot move at all, or he's out of here. Mm-hmm. And when you're filming, it's not the greatest situation.
We didn't move at all. Mm-mm. And then he came closer.
Yeah.
And he was like at 7. And then finally
staring into our soul.
And I'm just, my bow's on the ground. I'm just looking at this deer. But the GoPro's on, so that's good.
Yeah.
The encounter was documented. And then figured out that was a good place. And a couple days later, went back and hunted it again. And you had to leave early because you're trying to get home. You live in Canada. Or it's where you're from, at least.
Yeah,
so you had to drive all the way up there. Greg's with me this time. And we hear a buck for like 30 minutes probably.
It was like really close to first light. Like mm-hmm. probably last first 20 minutes of daylight.
Yeah, right after first light, we start hearing this deer.
Chill out, y'all.
We know it's going to be a deer. I mean.
You know what you're doing.
It's I guarantee you we heard him for at least 30 minutes before we saw him.
I think it was like an hour.
He got real close to us and we couldn't see him too. And then
we could hear him sniffing around at like like 25.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. But we couldn't see
him. Couldn't see him. And then it kind of like goes away and we're like, well, shoot, I guess who knows? You know, he might have smelled us or figured us out or whatever. Well, it ends up this deer is just feeding as slow as a deer possibly can. Like If you've ever seen a deer rut cruise, he's doing the opposite of that. He is just being so slow. And I see him probably, like you said, probably an hour after the initial, like, what was that? He's at, like, 45, and I just see a main beam moving around. And I'm like, oh, gosh, I see a deer, you know. And to shorten it up a little bit, we continue to watch this deer for an hour within bow range.
Yeah, like inside 40 yards, we're watching him just stick his head up in a mesquite or whatever and just feed around for 15 minutes and then go to another one and stick his head in, feed for 15 minutes.
What's he eating? He's just eating like the little fresh green growth, like the newest stuff on the trees around, like on the brush and whatnot.
You know what maples are?
Yeah, Michael does.
Oh, sure do.
Maybe he was eating a meeple.
A greenbrier. Brambles. That's what it was. Brambles.
Brambles.
He's just packing his belly full. And it's because we're in a wild country. There's no, like, ag or anything around, you know. So he's just eating natural browse. And he literally is, like, I almost stood up to shoot him three different times. But I'm trying to be patient and because I have a good window. And I'm like, if he comes over here and I just wait, he's going to give me a great shot. And the patience sort of paid off because he like, two or three different times kind of acted like he was going to veer off, kind of like Nameless did a long time ago. You remember?
Yep.
And then you realize, like, he's just kind of, like, sniffing around, but he has a general direction of travel. And he did it. He, about 1 hour, like literally we were keeping up with it, about 1 hour later, he finally steps out into the gap. And I've already kind of got my bow halfway up, and I go to just, I think I got to half draw or quarter draw that first time, and he just whips his head around and just sees me. And he literally is facing quartering away when I go to do this draw. He's not even broadside. He's quartering away 20 yards. And he's at zero on his alertness level, right? He has no clue we're in the world.
And the wind's blowing pretty good.
Yeah, that's right. The stuff is moving around us.
Yeah.
And he catches me. So, as soon as he looks, I have to kind of stop. And we're uncomfortable. He stares at us for probably 2 minutes, does the doe thing with his head where he puts it down, looks at us, and then we're still. So then he goes to do his thing. He kind of is like turning off, and he's moving. And in my experience, when deer are moving, you can usually get away with a draw. Not this guy. I go to draw from right there, and he just senses it and goes. Doesn't even turn to look or anything.
He just felt it.
He just felt it.
Just jackrabbit.
Hater. The worst part is, well, let me tell you about this deer. I thought he was a giant when we first saw him. And then he got closer and we realized he wasn't that big. It was real weird. I thought he was like a big, old, mature, like...
He shrunk like 60 inches.
Yeah.
God,
60? Yeah, I'm not kidding. Him and I both thought that.
Yeah, we thought it was an old, like,
yeah,
giant.
Old, like, seven-point giant-looking deer. And then whenever he whipped his head around and looked at me, I was like, he's a three-year-old. It was weird. But anyways, looking back at the footage, this is salt on the wound, he is at least partially blind in his left eye, which is the side he caught me on.
Oh, that ain't good.
No, it's not good at all.
How does this happen?
I don't know. Also, how do I keep shooting blind deer? Or trying to, know? Dang, golly. Man. Yeah, so that was my extent of the Texas public land this year. Greg, you did some hunting.
Did he hear you?
No way.
You don't think?
He might have heard you, but I think he can still catch a little movement out of that eye.
Probably. He heard... At some point in time, you had to switch batteries, and he heard a little bit of that, but he didn't get...
But that was before you even tried to draw.
Yeah. But he would had heard something in that direction, but it wasn't like he was ever spooked. He just looked over, didn't see anything, and went back to doing his thing.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
I figured something out about animals.
I would like to know.
Oh, boy.
So hogs cannot see that great. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But they catch you stalking them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think I got seen the other night. I'm pretty sure you got seen the other night. Mm-hmm. Only went to stalking hogs.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something that relates to my thoughts here. But when something can't see well, I think there's it's weird, but they see and rely on contrast more than they do actual, like, dialed hawk eagle eye vision. Mm-hmm. So there's, like, the Sasquatch thing is actually a big deal for animals that have either partial blindness or hawk vision, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I kind of wonder if that's the case. It's more that there's a big dark blob that I'm focusing on because that's all I can see out of that eye as opposed to, like, you know, seeing the detail of the bow drawing, you know, and moving or whatever.
Yeah, you're probably right. And also, just being on the ground is hard.
Yeah.
That's just all there is to it.
For sure.
And I think there's a thing to it as well where, like, in Kansas, you're on the ground with a deer that probably weighs more than you, especially if you haven't gone through, like, a full November of eating, you know? And so, like, his... just scaredy is not as high as a 100-pound deer is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I could take two of those deer on at once, you know what I mean? Like it's, they're literally more than half the size of some of the bucks that we shoot.
Well, and, like, does that make them, you know, do more coyotes eat them? I know the coyotes are a little bit smaller down there, too, but still relative to the deer size, the coyote is bigger than it is
in
Kansas or Nebraska or Michigan or whatever.
Yeah.
And I kind of wonder if, like, just – always on edge, more like I've seen 2-year-old Kansas bucks just go after a coyote. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But I don't know if I've ever seen a deer really do that. I've seen them be kind of not so scared of them. But it's just, I kind of wonder if they just have, like, more predators in the woods. You know,
I also tell you, I've hunted public land in a lot of states, and the only place that I've found arrows laying on the ground is Texas. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep.
That I think there's a lot of arrow flinging going on in Texas.
Yeah, every one of those deer have had an arrow flung at them.
Yeah.
Man, that's probably the truth.
I mean, we were finding blood trails and all types of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, there are people out there putting some deer down.
For real, we found a good blood trail.
Yeah, real good.
It's like, this deer killed him.
Smoked.
dude.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, it was also disheartening.
disheartening.
Oh, yeah, it's like, well, there's one less here, for sure.
Yeah.
My chances were already bad.
That's probably the highlights of my hunting.
Greg had some highlights.
Yeah,
huh?
That's what I was gonna say, Greg.
Yeah, I had a couple good hunts early on. I had some bucks. I had one like 2.5-year-old. Like, he was just way too tiny. I just couldn't make him look big.
Yeah,
and he was also like 40, 45 yards.
Trophy hunter, huh?
Yeah, I was trophy hunting. But after about day two, I was like kind of regretting not shooting at that buck.
Yeah,
but End up shooting at a doe on, like, day four or whatever. But
how'd that go?
Not good. She wasn't there when the arrow got there.
Is that because you're still shooting at kids' bow?
No, it is not.
They just fast.
You shooting a fast bow now.
Yeah, she was probably – I ranged her at 45, and she stopped, and I shot. And she flinches when the arrow's about a third of the way there.
That ain't good.
Well, you know, I had never thought about it this way.
That makes sense.
But a smaller animal has less to move out of the way.
For sure.
Mm-mm. So, like, a Kansas buck has got to move
17 inches of chest cavity.
That's right. And he's got to move a lot of weight and a lot of body out of the way.
Yeah, these deer can get it out of the way quick.
And it's like 5 inches. She has to move 5 inches, and you ain't hitting her anymore.
Yeah.
You know? That's a lot of difference.
Yeah. I noticed on, speaking of Nameless, he was at 23, and he moves probably, he ducks 2 to 3 inches before the arrow gets there. And that's a big deer, you know. So, like, a small deer, a third of 45 is 15. So she's starting to move when the arrow's at 15 yards, which would put her in the same category or even a little faster probably than a Nameless, you know.
I think that I heard Aaron Snyder say this one time. It might have been him. I don't know. Aaron has shot arrows at a lot of things, as have I, and he's hit a few. But I think that most cases, deer hear the arrow going through the air instead of, and people worry about the bow going off and what that sounds like. And I really think that the arrow sound is what deer are hearing. She flinched when the arrow's a third of the way there.
Yeah, they can hear something getting closer, and I think that's what freaks them out.
And, you know, it's not a... this is a don't try this at home, but I have gotten behind trees or hay bales and listened to arrows go by. It's a unnerving feeling.
You know what we should do?
Yes.
We should do a test.
We should do a test. Yes.
And we should...
What does a deer hear?
Well, no, we should shoot our bow when a deer is at like 30 yards, but shoot it in the opposite direction at like a target behind your stand and see what the... See, like, the timing and how much they flinch.
We can go out there and do that all year long.
I know.
If we're not shooting at the deer, we're not hunting them, right?
I mean,
it's kind of weird.
I'm cool with it. I know my intentions.
We'll call our local authorities.
I try to have integrity, man, but, like, you know, people don't.
Farm on South Park?
Believe you.
Yeah.
People don't believe you.
Yeah.
Just don't dress in camo, you know?
Yeah.
Blue shirts work well,
at least for clicks. But I think we should do the test. I have a fletching jig. We could buy every fletching known to man and just fletch up a bunch of different arrows.
Get a decimeter or something?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. We could just do it with our Zoom and just, you know, by what it sounds like and just see which one is loud. You know, Grand Thumb did that.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the cooler videos I've watched is what things different projectiles sound like.
What a
50 range.
Cal sounds like?
Yeah.
No,
they
thank
do,
you.
They do. It's cool. They get
ain't,
down
it's awesome.
Behind
ain't nothing
this
to
big
hide behind
burn.
When there's a 50 cal shooting. It ain't nothing to hide behind.
Dude, Micah was like, Mike Jones is that guy, right? And him Ooh. And yeah, him and Charlie are like down here just listening. And Mike is like,
"It's my cousin.
Y'all are scared. I'm having to get up here and get the sounds." You know, that's a good video. You should watch it if
I'll
you haven't.
Check it out.
Anyways, I think that would be a neat test because I truly believe that's why deer are jumping strings is the sound of the arrow, and slower arrows are quieter, so you got that going for you. But faster arrows get there faster. And so I don't really know if one is better than the other for jump, tell you the truth. I can tell you this. I shot at a deer this year in South Dakota, and he, like, flinches a little bit and then doesn't move at all with a really fast arrow. That's a very fast arrow. It's, like, probably 285 or more. Might be 290.
That's why I don't personally think that the arrow flight is what does it.
Because he didn't flinch?
Well, not just because of him, but other deer that have done the same thing that we've videoed. We've been videoing, you know, high-resolution, slow-motion camera capabilities for a few years now.
So Oklahoma.
We get to see. No.
22.
No, we're not
the same
talking
thing.
I just think that there's too many factors to say this is exactly
but
what
you're
it
right.
is.
Yeah. Yes.
And I hate to be that guy, but the deer's mentality in the moment matters so much.
I think so, too. I think it's hard to tell, but I feel more inclined to say that it is not that the arrow flight doesn't affect sometimes, but like that most of it is the bow going off. But that's just my unresearched opinion. So
I can tell you that the other night we were doing some hog hunting, and y'all had left to go spook some pigs, and then you came back and spooked our pigs.
If y'all have seen y'all's pigs,
I know it, dadgummit. It's all right. It's just pigs, right?
Yeah.
It was all fun. But I noticed that we could hear you at probably 100 or 120 yards, but it wasn't what I would call an alarming sound until you got to about 50. Like, if I was... say a hog rooting around, I wouldn't have perceived you until 50.
Mm-hmm.
So there might be a little something to that as far as.
You could go off a deep end with this stuff, but like, I wonder if there's some sort of, like, you know, there's just weird things, right, in nature and that kind of thing. Like, what if there's some almost like something about the molecules within the air.
Molecules.
Within the air that,
that's
like,
what hex suits are for, right?
Can,
yeah, dude.
Something
get that
like
hex.
It's a hex deal, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, have you ever seen when people put sound visualized? So they put like sand on a on a plate and then they run sound through it and it makes these different patterns or whatever?
Yeah.
It's like, what if there's something in the air and the molecules that like, at a certain point of distance, all of a sudden it breaks through some sort of, you know, I don't know how to explain it, but it's like, for whatever reason, it's like super subtle until you get to 50, and then it's like, what is that? And it's like a big jump all of a sudden.
So there'll be a lot of different opinions on things, and I'm not actually stating an opinion. I'm just going to tell you what somebody told me one time. We had a deer lease down in South Texas, and there's this old Mexican man down there who was the goat tender. And if you ever get to talk to a really older Hispanic fella, they're worth talking to because they've seen like some different cool stuff. He said that that part between a deer's hoof right there, it's called some sort of a gland, but he thought that...
Interdigital.
Yeah, that's right, the interdigital gland. He thought that they felt vibrations through that spot. And that's why when a doe is smelling you, she goes to stomping because she's trying to clear that out and like kind of give a fresh palate to it or something like that. Which, there's probably no scientific backing for that, but I thought it was neat. Because he had like a formulated hypothesis as to what was going on, which I would imagine that was something that he inferred and also discussed with other people throughout the years. So I thought it was kind of cool.
That is interesting.
Which kind of goes with what you're talking about as to, you know, can they feel you? The sixth sense thing.
Like, is there, who knows? Is there something, man, that like, I don't know. It's interesting.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on FishingBooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land? Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today. Because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
But that don't you know you were there?
She looked my direction when I drew.
But she wasn't on alert before that?
No.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, did you find your arrow?
Yeah, found my arrow.
There you go.
Did you shoot it again?
No. That broadhead's kind of toast.
Yeah, that'll happen.
But that arrow should be good. That was pretty much the highlight of the first trip.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw some good bucks on the first trip, but nothing really close. But decided to go back down there after we all left, and I was literally just trying to shoot a doe. I'd only shot, you know, one whitetail this year, and so I was like, I'm just gonna shoot a doe. And the first evening I go out there and like I get a doe at like 12 yards, and I'm trying to draw back, and I'm trying not to just like flail into my back wall and like move a lot, And as soon as I get to my back wall, I hit and bounce off and let down.
Ooh.
And she freaks out.
That's a good one. Really big one.
I start laughing immediately.
Gave her the JP just to get some reaction, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She freaks out, runs off. I'm like, crap. And so the next evening, I'm getting the same wind as was forecasted. I'm like, I'll just go back to the same spot. Only spook that deer. I'll get in there and try to shoot another doe. When I get down there, the wind is complete 180, doing the exact opposite of what they called. And I'm like, crap. And so I had this X I put on, marked on the map for, I think I saw it. I marked it December 2nd, 2022. And I'd never been there. And I was like, well, I think that'll work on this wind. And so I headed out there and got set up. And as soon as I got set up, I heard something, and I think it was a buck heard me setting up and thought I was another buck and started raking his antlers. And so I gave him a grunt and just shut up and, you know, going to hopefully see him here in the next, you know, few minutes. But I keep hearing the noise just every so often, and it was probably 30 minutes after I first heard him, I see him. And I can tell off the bat it's a pretty good buck. And he does exactly what that buck you had. He was just feeding as slow as possible. And I probably watched him for 30 to 45 minutes just feed inside 60 yards.
It's unnerving.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
Especially when you're by yourself, I bet.
Yeah. And It's a lot better when you're not freezing to death.
Like we were that morning.
We were cold.
Yeah, it was a weird deal. In the mornings, it would get colder as the day pushed on because the wind would get up.
Yeah, the wind would start picking up. And like we saw him so early, I didn't have a chance to put on my jacket yet. And
bad.
We were both just shaking.
Oh, I forgot to say that. So I don't get buck fever super bad. I get a little bit shaky before the moment. And as soon as I draw, I'm usually just locked in. Boy. This happened to me the year before, and it happened to me this year. I got cold, and I'll just go to just shaking bad. And then, like, as soon as the deer would start moving, I would just lock it in. I wouldn't shake because I thought I might be able to get a shot soon. Yeah. And then when he stopped and eat, it went on for 20 minutes probably.
Yeah, yeah, we were both shaking bad. But this one, at least, it was like, you know, it might have been 60 degrees, and I had just, you know, hiked all the way back in there. I'm hot and sweaty.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I had a little shake going, but I wasn't, like, freezing, so it wasn't that bad. And so I was watching him for, like, 30 minutes just feed down the – I had a little pinch point kind of picked out in this thicket, and he was doing exactly what he's supposed to, just walking right down the trail. I thought he was going to pop out at, like, 25 yards, and I was just going to smoke him. But when he starts getting closer, he starts veering off a little bit. And I range stuff right in front of him at like 42, 43, and he's like just behind that. I'm like, 45. I'm like, I really want to shoot closer than that because last time I shot 45, it was not a good result.
You can't just aim low whenever they're not there anymore.
No, you have to aim like where you're going to guess they're going to be.
Yeah, yeah.
But
then you hope they don't hit them in the nose or something.
Yeah. But he was working his way out, and I was like afraid he was going to get, you know, out past like 50, and I was like, crap. But then he just took a turn and started angling my way, and I started hurrying and ranging stuff that he might pass in front of. And I ranged this one little bush that was at 38, 39 is what I kept getting. And he stepped out right in front of that. I grunt stopped him right there. And I had my 35. So my 35 shoots a little bit low. And I was guessing at 36, 37. And I just put my 35 right where I'd want to hit him and shot. And arrow looks perfect left and right, and I hear it just smack into him, and he starts crashing immediately. little peaky, but he starts crashing immediately and just like slams into this
little peaky.
It's your rap name.
That's him. Anyway, he starts crashing immediately and, like, takes off these limbs on this bush right next to him that I ranged. And he's stumbling bad. He runs. I can hear him run off, and he's just stumbling the whole way. But I don't really hear him crash, and so I'm kind of worried about the shot. And so I give him an hour and decide to go look for blood.
Little peeky. Michael's still wiggling over there. I'm trying to listen to you, Greg. I'm going to turn this way.
Michael's dressed for a blizzard right now.
Anyways, I'm very interested in your story, you Greg.
He's got the Wicked Witch of the West. Look, yeah, he does.
Pointy. Exactly right.
Little pointy.
Little pointy. And a little peaky.
Anyways, he runs off. I don't really hear him crash. I'm not sure if I heard him crash. And I go looking for blood, and there's not much blood at the scene of the shot.
Really?
Yeah, not.
What kind of broadhead were you shooting?
I was shooting a fixed blade, and I was kind of, you know, expecting this.
Yeah.
And I figured where he ran, I would be able to see him where he fell. So I, you know, went out to where I could see back into where he fell, and didn't see him when I first went out there, but then I was walking back to go get first blood, and I saw white belly.
And, nice.
Yeah.
How far did you go?
Maybe 100 yards.
Man. So he ran pretty far. Where'd you hit him?
I hit him about as low as you can hit a deer and kill it. I hit him right through both front legs and just inside the chest cavity.
So
he had holes in his armpits.
So heart shot.
I think it was heart in front of lungs.
It's a lot like Tyler's big buck, the long shot that everybody knows about.
Yeah, I would say it's even a little forward than that.
Okay, but more forward. But
did you hit the elbow?
He didn't drop much on the shot,
mm-hmm.
but he loaded up, and so I hit just in front of the leg bone.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was that and hit the opposite side leg.
How about that? That's neat.
So, like, the leg bone, like, below the elbow or above and forward of the elbow? You know what I mean?
I think below the elbow, right below the knuckle,
mm-hmm.
and just into the chest cavity.
Gotcha.
So, you would say that you hit him in, like, in front of the shoulder, but it's still a good shot because of where his body was
like,
positioned.
If you look at the video, mm-hmm. like, the arrow looks great left and right,
mm-hmm.
but when I walked up on the deer, the arrow is in front of his leg.
Mm-hmm.
And I was
mm-hmm.
like, oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
But it got in the chest cavity, and I'm assuming it hit heart.
So you hit a deer square in the heart. You didn't get the heart out, so you don't know how much of it you hit or whatever. How far did your deer run? 70 or 80?
The big one? Yeah. No, he ran, like, 40 or 50.
Okay.
Hit that buck this year in Kansas in the heart, and he went 300, didn't he?
Oh, he went forever. I was surprised. When I shot him, I was like, oh, that is good.
He hit him with a big old broadhead.
Yeah.
It's a big old deal.
And though. I mean, right before I cut my hand almost in half, I was feeling that heart. I was like, man, I smoked this thing.
Yeah, you took the top of the heart off.
Yeah. And he ran, he ran a big loop.
Mm. Yeah. I don't know if there is any way to predict. I mean, you can always say, well, it's not a good shot, so he's going very far. But, mm-hmm. like, so many deer get smoked and go far or not far.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, he may have gone 70 or 80. I always thought he ran, like, 50 yards.
Yeah, but and it kind of runs at you, so it gets kind of weird.
Like,
yeah.
He dies closer to me than when I shot than where I shot him at.
But, so, that deer got hit in the heart, definitely not lungs. Right where it was.
I mean, isn't there a little bit of frontal lung right there?
It kind of goes up, though. So I don't know. It just depends on how low or high you hit the deer.
I don't know.
And where did you hit your deer?
Straight double lung.
Straight. And it went 40?
Probably went 60 or 70.
Okay.
Straight uphill, too.
Yeah. I just think that deer just go further than what you see on TV a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think if you hit him in the heart, 80-90% of the time, they're going to go less than 70.
I mean,
I don't think this is accurate.
I don't know personally, if it is either.
I feel like that heart sits 90 degrees the way it's sitting in there right now. We're looking at a certain
Artist rendition.
Yeah, artist rendition of Dear Anemone.
There's a side view.
That's a little bit more accurate.
I mean, if that's accurate, then that's you probably could get some lung right in there.
Yeah, see, that's about where I hit him.
That's the elbow joint right there. Or the elbow, you know, what you see on the deer from the outer of him. That's the elbow.
I hit him in front of that leg bone right there.
In front of this one?
Yeah. But he loaded up, yeah, so I think it's in a different spot. Back.
Yeah.
And at that angle, it doesn't take a lot of the leg movement to make that move back quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, I think that we could do a whole podcast where we talk about certain shots we made on deer and talk about the anomalies within those shots because there's a lot of stuff to that.
Yeah.
I just so much go back to the thing of if you don't see him go down, just it is good to be cautious.
Yeah.
You know,
that's how you were, right?
I was super cautious on this one because, I mean, he was stumbling so bad. I figured he would still be over there 100 yards and I could maybe get a second shot.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily, when I saw him, he was done.
It's good, man.
And
what is this deer?
This deer is a, for where we shot this, this is a big buck.
Yeah.
And this is the biggest buck I've killed on public land. And
solid 10 point.
Just a solid 10 point. He's got weak brows, but
got
everything
good
else.
Fours.
He's got good beam length too for what he is.
He's cool, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would like to shoot one like that one day. That'd be awesome.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. Dude. Texas deer are challenging. I was telling Tyler the other day, I haven't shot a deer in Texas since January 1st, 2019. No, I take that back.
With a gun.
But well, I shot one with a gun the other day, but with 30, a bow.
30.
It's been since then, which is crazy. But for one, the antler restrictions. Yeah, I guarantee you. The antler restrictions are hard with that. And then, two, it's just they aren't easy to kill.
Antler restrictions are wearing me out.
Yeah,
for sure.
I have a 6 point on my property. He's been showing up at night lately. That is like 11 inches wide, and he's probably 4. And he'll never be legal. He's cool. I'd love to shoot him, but he'll never be legal.
Not to change subject too much, but I've been seeing where people have been putting the word unalive on Instagram a lot.
Yeah.
Is that a thing? Are we getting rid of dead now because we get censored?
I think killed is a thing, maybe.
Yeah, but these were in lieu of dead, the word dead.
So I see it in lieu of
But don't people, like, killed. when they're like, oh, man, that dude made me laugh really hard. I'm dead.
Oh, I'm dead.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a Gen Z thing.
It might just be like a trend. You know, like a trendy thing to say.
It's a dumb thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought it was a censored thing.
We live in a dumb time.
What?
Well, yeah,
how
I
are
think,
they using it? So, like, instead of saying...
he doesn't know. Well, that's weird.
I've never heard of it. You know... I saw this buck the other day on the side of the road. Somebody had hit him, and he was unalive.
I see unalived as in, like, in replace of killed. Like, I see people talk about how their kids almost unalive themselves, like,
what?
Doing dangerous stuff or whatever.
It's just kind of a funny way to say it or whatever.
But I think it comes from, like, it's like a trendy, funny thing to say that comes from censorship, I think, is where it originates from.
Originates in TikTok, probably.
I see it, that's where I see it all the time. It's TikTok.
Okay, yeah. That's probably it.
TikTok is a weird place for censorship. That's why X is where it's at.
On X.
On X, baby.
Get on
Greg,
X, y'all.
Greg dropped an X. Did you hear him?
He did.
Yeah.
He put an X on the map, baby.
That's right.
And he was on the X.
It paid off.
That's right, dude. Yeah. That's where you want to be, on the X.
Yeah. Well, cool, man. Congrats on the big buck.
Yeah, thank you.
Y'all remember that hunting season never ends. Get out there, chase them pigs, and remember, this is your element.
Live in it.
You ever get that feeling? The walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at the Meat Eater.com. Hope to see you at the show.